The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy. Support for coconut diarrhea remedy. Question. My husband suffered with diarrhea for many years until we read about coconut macaroon cookies on your website. He tried them and found they helped. He got tired of the cookies over the holidays and switched to coconut candy. That seemed to work just as well. Later he tried a piece of coconut cream pie and found that it also stopped the diarrhea. Answer. More than 20 years ago, Donald Agar wrote to us with this fascinating story. Excuse me. I have had Crohn's disease for 40 years, and during that time I have had a never-ending battle with diarrhea. Low modal helps some, but it doesn't eliminate the problem. 3 months ago, I bought a box of Archway coconut macaroon cookies. I've been eating two a day and have not experienced diarrhea in that time. If by chance I eat three in a day, I get constipated. Believe me, I have a new life now. My brother-in-law has a friend who just had cancer and suffered diarrhea as a consequence of the operation. We told him about the cookies and they corrected his diarrhea. Since then, many others have written to us to report benefit from consuming coconut in some form or another. Just last year, researchers reported that the lauric, L-A-U-R-I-C, acid in coconuts is effective against diarrhea caused by Clostridium difficile infections. And that's cited in Frontiers in Microbiology, January 17, 2018. You will learn more about coconut and other remedies for diarrhea in our book, Quick and Handy Home Remedies, Q&As for Your Common Ailments. It is available at www.peoplespharmacy.com. Question. You sometimes have had questions about plantar warts. I want to share my family's experience. In the 1960s, my teenage daughter got a severe case of plantar warts from the showers at school. She has a high pain tolerance and didn't show them to us until she could hardly walk. The doctor I took her to advised her to soak her feet in water as hot as she could, stand 20 minutes a day for 2 weeks. In less than 2 weeks, most of the warts fell off or disappeared. She soaked her feet while watching TV or doing homework. Answer. This was a hot new treatment for plantar warts at the time. Dermatologists published their success with a small case series in the Cleveland Clinic Quarterly in October 1962. More than half of the patients they treated with water between 113 and 118 degrees Fahrenheit had their warts on their soles of their feet disappear. These patients soaked their feet just once or twice a week. Saltpeter in military chow is urban legend. Question. As a baby boomer, I heard that servicemen in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam were given saltpeter in their food as a deterrent for sexual urges. I wonder if that is true, and if so, whether there is any connection to saltpeter and prostate problems. Answer. The belief that saltpeter, which is potassium nitrate, will reduce sex drive is an urban legend. Rumors persist that authorities add this preservative to food served at institutions like the military, prisons, all-male boarding schools, and summer camps. There is no evidence that this has ever been used as a strategy to dampen desire. This compound has been used to cure meat. It is also found in fireworks, fertilizer, and toothpaste formulated for sensitive teeth. Toms of Maine Rapid Relief Sensitive Toothpaste, Sensodyne, and prescription-only Colgate Prevident 5000 all contain potassium nitrate. The Environmental Working Group ranks this as a safe toothpaste ingredient. We could find no evidence that it impacts the prostate. Question. I was given a prescription for clindamycin when a thorn was removed from my finger. This is a dangerous antibiotic. Soon after I took it, I had symptoms of what I thought was food poisoning. Really, it was that clindamycin had killed off all the good bacteria in my system. I also developed other reactions to this drug, including a painful rash on the palms of my hands. I was misdiagnosed with Crohn's disease. On my own, I decided to try probiotics since the doctors wouldn't give any credence to my suspicions about clindamycin. The probiotics repaired my system, and I have been completely symptom-free for 5 years. People should be fully informed about the risks as well as the benefits of this drug. That way they can determine if it is worth taking. Answer. When clindamycin kills off bacteria in the digestive tract, it provides the opportunity for Clostridium difficile or C. difficile to take over. C. difficile infections cause diarrhea and can be dangerous and difficult to treat. Crohn's disease, a form of inflammatory bowel disease, also can cause severe diarrhea. However, it would be unlikely for it to cause no further symptoms for 5 years. We discuss misdiagnosis and how to protect yourself from such medical errors in our book, Top Screw-Ups. You will find it in your library, or you can purchase a copy at www.peoplespharmacy.com. From the Costco magazine, Tough Questions, Talking with Relatives About Your Family Health History, by California freelance writer Lance Fraser, who specializes in science and health journalism. As we learn more about the genetic links to health conditions, from cancer to diabetes and hypertension to heart disease, it becomes increasingly important to know your family's health history. Dr. Mac Ruffin, chair of the Department of Family and Community Medicine at Penn State Health, says it can be a challenge as people don't like to talk about their pedigrees, and sometimes families are estranged, or people don't like to talk about their health history, or they could be adopted and not know anything about their birth parents, which makes the task even harder. But he says that knowledge is vital to your health and that of succeeding generations. Ruffin says physicians need to know what kind of risk shows itself in your family history. And that knowledge has to be as specific as possible. Knowing everybody died of cancer isn't helpful, he says. You need to know what kind of cancer it was and when they died. If they got cancer in their 70s and died in their 80s, that's not as important as if they got cancer in their 40s and died in their 50s. He advises starting to gather information from the people you can reach out and touch. Dr. Wendy Dyer, a Sacramento area internist with the Mercy Medical Group, says this information can be critical in your health care. For example, a patient might not be concerned or might be embarrassed about a family history of liver disease because perhaps attributing it to alcohol, when in fact it could be caused by an inherited metabolic disorder called hemochromatosis that can be treated when detected early, she says. There are a variety of ways to find family health history information, including family Bibles, says Ruffin, and birth and death records, obituaries, and so on are much more available online than they were a decade ago. Church and union records can also be helpful, he adds. In the end, it comes down to talking. If your nearest ancestors are deceased, all you can do is to say, "It ends now." Put down what you do know. Talk about your history with your children, write it down, and pass it on to future generations, says Dr. Lori Orlando, director of Duke University's Precision Medicine Program. I found that most families, especially once they understand the importance of this conversation to succeeding generations, are willing to have the conversation, says Ruffin. You might not get all the answers the first time, but if you don't try, you'll never learn anything. And talking points. Dr. Ruffin offers the examples of learning about a grandfather who died of heart problems. He suggests asking the following. How old was he when he died? Was it unexpected? What were his health struggles? Did he drink or smoke? Was he active or sedentary? When and why did he give up his hobbies? Resistance training. By Casey Hirsch, who is a licensed clinical social worker and author. She specializes in autoimmune disease, trauma, and how to heal through integrative models. March is National Autoimmune. March was National Autoimmune Disease Awareness Month, and according to the American Autoimmune Related Diseases Association, 50 million Americans have an autoimmune disease. Our bodies are designed to fight infection and protect us from harmful invaders such as bacteria and toxins. However, in the case of autoimmune disease, the body becomes confused and begins attacking itself. Johns Hopkins Medicine reports autoimmune disease has been found in every organ system of the body and includes type 1 diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, and Crohn's disease. While the National Institutes of Health estimates at least 80 diseases are caused by an autoimmune response, identifying individual treatment needs can be overwhelming. Complex systems occur as the body fights against itself. According to University of Virginia rheumatologist Dr. Angela Crowley, autoimmunity can mimic many other diseases and common symptoms such as joint pain and inflammation that are shared among autoimmune conditions. This makes diagnosis difficult. Crowley emphasizes that when treating autoimmune disease, everyone is different. Studies confirm that inflammation is a common denominator among autoimmune diseases and that stress increases inflammation. Negative stressors include work overload, relationship conflicts, no peer support, illness, and poverty. Trauma heightens the body's stress response. Dr. Vincent Felitti, a trauma expert, confirms that traumatic childhood experiences can contribute to illness. A whole body approach includes acknowledging how lifestyle, history, and emotions affect the immune system and therefore disease process. For many, acknowledging the uniqueness of the whole body helps the healing process to begin. Rather than approaching physical symptoms as separate from lifestyle and emotions, shifting focus toward addressing both physical and emotional aspects can create a balance between traditional medicine and holistic and alternative medicine. From the New York Times, Your Health by Samathi Reddy. Drugs offer alternatives to chemo. An emerging approach targets cancerous tumors based on genetic traits rather than body location. Michelle Lowry was a healthy baby until a pea-sized lump appeared on her neck when she was two. Within weeks, it had swelled into a life-threatening tumor, obstructing her breathing, and she was hospitalized at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles. Her right arm and hand stopped working, recalled her mom, Christina Lowry, who lives in Simi Valley, California. Her face was swollen. Her eye was almost swollen shut. The tumor was almost all the way around her neck. A test showed her tumor was caused by a so-called NTRK fusion, which happens when a gene known as NTRK fuses with another unrelated gene. Such fusions are found in about 1% of solid tumors and cause cancer in virtually any tissue type in the body. Her doctors got her enrolled in a clinical trial where she was able to take an experimental drug called larotrectinib. Within days, the tumor shrank. Within weeks, it wasn't even visible. Today, Michelle is a happy three-year-old who loves Disney princesses and belting out Vampirina songs, doing puzzles and helping her parents cook. The most recent MRI and CT scans show no residual disease in her neck or chest, says her father, Joseph Lowry, and doctors. The treatment is part of an emerging way of treating certain cancers by targeting tumors based on their genetic characteristics rather than their location in the body or what they look like under a microscope. Such drugs can offer an alternative to standard treatments like chemotherapy and radiation. For certain cancers, the newer drugs can be more effective and in some cases have fewer milder side effects. In November, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved larotrectinib, Michelle's drug, Merck and Company's Keytruda, which harnesses a patient's immune system, was initially approved to treat site-specific tumors such as those in the lung and skin. In 2017, the FDA expanded its use to treat tumors with genetic defects known as microsatellite instability, which are present in an estimated 4% of cancers. Other drugs, including one that targets genetic abnormalities believed to be linked to bladder cancer, are in a testing or trial. Researchers have long viewed this approach as promising. Now more drugs are making their way toward commercial availability. This is the original promise of precision medicine, says David Hyman, a lead researcher of larotrectinib's clinical trials and chief of early drug development at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. That it wouldn't matter where the cancer came from, that genetics were going to guide therapy. Larotrectinib is sold as Vitrakv, and that's spelled V-I-T-R-A-K-V-I, and is an oral medication taken twice a day. It is manufactured and marketed by Bayer, which this month obtained the full rights from Loxo Oncology. Loxo is L-O-X-O. The company estimates NTRK fusions affect between 2,500 to 3,000 new patients a year in the U.S. To find patients with NTRK fusions, doctors must request a specific test, which isn't common protocol at a lot of cancer centers because the tests are expensive and not always covered by insurance providers. Unfortunately, the testing is kind of new to the oncology world, says Joe Germino, Bayer's oncology vice president of U.S. Medical Affairs. In clinical trials, about three-quarters of 55 patients had their tumors shrink by at least 30%, according to results published in the New England Journal of Medicine and the journals Lancet, Oncology, and Cancer. More than half of the patients are still taking the treatment, and four pediatric patients underwent surgery to remove what was left of the tumor. While we may not be able to cure cancer, we may be able to control it, much like we do with high blood pressure or diabetes, says Leo Mascarenhas House, Deputy Director of the Children's Center for Cancer and Blood Diseases at CHLA, I believe that's Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, and one of Michelle's doctors. Dr. Germino says the side effects of Vitrakvi are mild to moderate compared to treatments like chemotherapy. Side effects can include dizziness, anemia, fatigue, and abnormalities in liver function tests, which usually dissipate. The wholesale cost of Vitrakv ranges from $11,000 to $32,000 a month, depending on the dose. The company has assistance programs for patients who need help paying, and a spokeswoman says most insurances provide coverage for patients whose tumors test positive for NTRK gene fusion. The monthly price for Keytruda is about $13,600. The company says most insurances provide coverage. Some experts caution that treatments like larotrectinib won't become the mainstay. The type of cancer a patient has will continue to be really important in a lot of settings, Dr. Hyman says. For now, the number of patients who can be treated with drugs like larotrectinib is small, limited to cases with these types of tumors. For Michelle, after blood tests and an ultrasound yielded no clues, she got a biopsy and took a test to analyze the biological markers of her tumor. Results showed Michelle had a rare type of cancer, low-grade spindle cell sarcoma with an NTRK fusion. On December 2nd, she had her first dose of larotrectinib. By the next day, her parents say she was back to sitting up and talking. Michelle was near death, says Dr. Mascarenhas, who was hired by Bayer in October to be their speakers in their speakers bureau, but terminated that relationship this month. And she turned around and left the ICU in 24 hours. She was discharged from the hospital 3 days after we started the medicine. Her parents say she has no side effects, though initially she had some nausea. She gets monthly checkups and scans at the hospital. Larotrectinib is literally a lifesaver for our daughter, says Mr. Lowry. Traditional cancer treatments that are less targeted would have had little to no impact on our daughter's specific form of cancer, and she would likely not have survived had we gone down that path. similar drugs in the pipeline. Bayer is testing an FGFR inhibitor treatment in early clinical trials that could be used in cancers with FGFR genetic abnormalities. These may be associated with up to 50% of bladder cancers, says Joe Gerino, who's Bayer's oncology vice president in the U.S. medical affairs. Nita Seibel, head of pediatric solid tumors therapeutics for the Federal National Cancer Institute, says they, along with Children's Oncology Group, a group of pediatric oncology experts, started a study in 2017 open to any cancer patient 21 years old or younger who has a solid tumor that failed to go away with standard therapy. Patients can submit a tissue sample to be analyzed to identify genetic aberrations. If it matches one of 10 different cancer drugs currently being tested, eligible patients can enroll in the study and receive the treatment free of charge. Of the 10 drugs, only larotrectinib is commercially available. A similar study in adults is ongoing. Wrist osteoarthritis. The wrist that you broke all those years ago has been causing a dull ache in recent months. After a weekend spent painting two rooms, the dull ache has become much more painful. You have to use your other hand for even basic tasks such as turning a doorknob. The wrist is a complicated joint, and wrist pain can have many causes. One common source of wrist pain in older adults is osteoarthritis, sometimes called wear and tear arthritis, twists and turns. The wrist is made up of 8 small bones that look like a handful of macadamia nuts with various joint surfaces. A wrist joint is the interface between your forearm and finger bones. Wrists give your hands a wide range of motion and are quite durable considering the high volume of use and stress they take. The joint surfaces of each of your wrist bones are covered by a smooth and slippery lining or cartilage that facilitates easy, pain-free movement. By the way, this is from the Mayo Clinic health letter. Osteoarthritis occurs when areas of cartilage wear away and roughen. With wrist osteoarthritis, cartilage wear is usually preceded by a wrist fracture or some kind of ligament damage. This leads to uneven loading of joint surfaces, which leads to wear over time. Eventually, cartilage may wear away in spots and allow bone to rub on bone. A key symptom is pain throughout the wrist area. Pain often develops over time, but can sometimes come on due to a specific event. Once pain develops, it is often aggravated by wrist overuse or strain, and lessens with rest. Other signs and symptoms include swelling, stiffness that can limit range of motion, clicking noises with movement, and weakness due to pain. Diagnosing wrist osteoarthritis often requires ruling out other possible causes. These include immune-related problems such as rheumatoid arthritis, a fracture gout, or joint pain caused by other diseases such as Lyme disease. Keeping active. Since wrist osteoarthritis often comes on gradually, there can be a fairly long period of discomfort that's noticeable, but not severe enough to stop you from doing what you want to do. A doctor's examination can provide an accurate diagnosis so you know what you're dealing with. Still, you may notice symptom flare-ups. If you use your wrist more than usual, repetitively, or with too much strain, steps that can help improve wrist function and reduce wrist flare-ups include, 1, use your wrists wisely. Take mental notes on which actions cause pain or pain flare-ups. You can take steps to modify wrist use by switching to your other wrist to do certain activities or avoiding unnecessary strain, such as by wheeling groceries to your car in a cart rather than using your hands to carry heavy bags. There are many tools such as jar openers, lever, doorknobs, or large-handled kitchen utensils that can help reduce wrist strain, and occupational therapists can provide modifications for specific tasks. Second, using a flexible splint or brace for activity. An easily removable wrist brace that allows for movement can reduce pain while helping prevent flare-ups. A daytime brace is best used while doing movements that may cause pain. It may be recommended that you leave it off at other times to maintain wrist flexibility. A splint at nighttime may also be worth considering. 3. Wrist exercises. Simple range of motion exercises that involve moving your wrist in different directions may help reduce joint stiffness, such as using your wrist in non-aggravating ways. Wrist strengthening also can help increase the support your muscles provide to the wrist. Tamping down pain. If flare-ups of pain occur, you may be able to get things back under control with the following options. Heat and cold. Start with 5 to 10 minutes of mild heat from a heating pad or warm water. Follow that with a cloth-covered cold pack applied to the joint or soaking the joint in cool water for a few minutes. You can cycle back and forth for about 30 minutes, ending with warmth. Heat and cold can be used on their own as well. Rigid wrist brace. An immobilizing splint can be used during pain flare-ups or when there's pain at rest. This can give the wrist time to recover. Topical pain medication. Short-term use of topical non-steroidal and inflammatory drugs, including diclofenac sodium, which is Voltaren or Solaraze, can provide pain relief during flare-ups. Talk to your doctor about this often preferred pain relief drug choice for older adults, as it's suspected to have a lower risk of kidney, heart, or gastrointestinal side effects compared with oral NSAIDs. Topical capsaicin, derived from chili peppers, may also help relieve pain without any NSAID side effects. Oral pain medications, short-term use of acetaminophen or Tylenol and others, or oral NSAIDs such as ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin IV or others, or naproxen, Aleve, naproxen, can help relieve flare-up pain. However, avoid using these on a regular basis without talking to your doctor or pharmacist about side effects. Corticosteroid injections. Corticosteroid injections are commonly performed and can provide varying pain relief for some people. If the injection works, the number of injections you can receive is limited, as repeated injections can damage the joint or skin. Surgery. When non-surgical treatments have been attempted but aren't enough, several surgical options are available. The goal of surgery is to relieve pain. The amount of wrist function you'll have afterwards depends on the procedure. Partial removal of certain deep wrist nerves is a lesser-known procedure that's gaining interest, in part due to research at Mayo Clinic. In one study, about 85% of people who had this procedure experienced satisfactory to excellent pain improvement. Range of motion and strength aren't impacted with the procedure, but it doesn't stop the progression of osteoarthritis. One of the procedures discussed below may still eventually be needed. Surgical options come in a range of variations, but generally involve using a camera to view the inside of your wrist. Your surgeon may try to resurface some of the worn parts of your wrist, removal of one or more wrist bones, partial fusion of some wrist joints, and partial or full joint replacement. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.